My name is Wanjama Daniel. I am founder and coordinator Seed Savers Network. It's a grassroots movement of small-scale farmers who are saving their own seeds and using their own knowledge, their own technology to grow food and to share expertise. It's sort of a solidarity movement and basing knowledge in food production from our ancestors who used to grow food without really relying on anyone, and who used to have independence to eat whatever they want, because then there was nobody was interfering in what people eat or what people grow or how they do it. Yeah, so going back to the roots.
Okay.
We have 58,000 farmers who are members of our Seed Savers Network. We have been running for 11 years now, since 2009. And our offices are in Girgil.
Mm-hmm.
We are in Girgil, but also we have some people in the field in various places. Girgil is also field. It's also a rural setting, not in urban place. We are in near Lake Lementaita. Near Lake Lementaita, where we have office and training center and a demonstration garden. We also have some work going on in Kakamega and Vihiga. We also have some people in Baringo. We have some farmers in Lamu. So we are quite spread, including Isiolo, who are also doing this. So we are a network of farmers who train other farmers and farmers who advocate for food sovereignty and advocate for safe and clean food coming to our plate.
Okay. Well, then I'm thinking a question raised about the issue of drought. Is there a way we can, first of all, where does the failure come in? But also number two, is there a way we can stop this once and for all?
Of course, there is climate change issues. Yeah, droughts have become more common. Even this year, around Girgil here, we lost the whole crop of maize. Beans and beets were harvested, but the maize was lost. Now we are experiencing rains, but no one is planted. Nothing is on the field. So there is aspect of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
But the major problem is actually the food security policy that we have in the country, because it looks at a particular crop. Instead of looking at the whole spectrum of crops and basing the choice of what people could grow on their agroecological regions, we are looking at just one crop. And I believe this crop, the maize that we say is our food security crop, is it's because to the industry is the easiest crop to make seeds, to make hybrid seeds. And it is also the crop that demands fertilizer. It might demand chemicals. It is a crop that gives agro input industry business. And I don't believe there is any other reason for us having maize as our food security strategy. It's only that it gives some people business. And that's why even people who are not supposed to be growing maize, they are told to grow maize, they are told to use fertilizer, they are told to use hybrid seeds, because it is a very lucrative business for agro input industry. And therefore, maize is very hard to grow. The slightest shortage in rains, we fail. The slightest issue to do with the environmental challenges with pests, we fail. Every other problem come and then we lose it. We don't have food. That to me is the main challenge. Like, why do we have policy of food security based on maize and only maize? Like, if we don't have maize, we should go hungry.
And I'm also thinking, last year, there's this platform called the CS Monitor, which basically said because of COVID and the impact it had on urban areas, a lot of people went back to the farms. And so there was essentially what they said is excess food, as they called it. Within the same year, there was a bit of hunger here and there.
You know, we have a paradox in this country. The people who are very hungry are small-scale farmers. The hungriest people actually are the small-scale farmers. The people who are hungry are those who cannot buy food, because I don't believe in the first place that we had excess food. Because if you look at the import data for food, you see we are importing much more food nowadays from Tanzania, from Uganda. We're importing even normal food that we should have had here, even beans, all the way from Rwanda. So we are importing a lot of food. We cannot feed ourselves anymore. And for instance, I have traveled to country like Uganda, and I have seen the way they are growing their food, more agroecological, more natural way. You will go to rural towns, you don't find any agro shop. But in a similar situation in Kenya, a rural setting will have so many agro shops selling chemicals and selling all the other inputs. But these people are the ones who are feeding us now, but then they are not not using as much chemicals, as much agro input as we are using ourselves. So I think the whole issue of having excess food, I don't trust that kind of information. But again, the people who really feel it when we don't have food are small-scale farmers, and these are peasants. The challenge is that they have been told to adapt farming methods that are not suitable for small-scale farming. So they end up, because the highest priority for small-scale farmers, you know, is feeding their family. And the policymakers are not coming up with policies that embrace technologies that are able to help them grow food, grow diverse food to feed their family. Instead, they are being told farming as a business. But when they grow their own food, just by chance that they have grown that monoculture thing that they are being told to grow, whether it is tomatoes or it is maize or it is whatever, whenever they do well, which is rarely because of the weather, then there is no market for them. So either way, they go at a loss. So either way, they have no food, either because it doesn't perform well, and if there is a failure, they have no money to buy food. So urban community are also becoming hungry. They're also getting hungry when jobs are lost, when there is nothing else to do, and therefore they also start relying on the rural community in the season where we have maybe some better production. They start relying on rural community, but the people who are affected more by food shortage are the people who grow food, which is very, very bad situation.
Well, it's actually, you presented like a very curious issue. You will see for every bus that comes, there are tons of sacks of potatoes, maize, kidogo, unga ya wimbi, bananas. And this trend, I think, started last year. What's up with this new culture of upcountry people feeding the urban kids? These buses behind Afya Center, Nairobi, you'll find half of their parking lot is no longer even for cars. It's for sorting out the foodstuff sent from upcountry. You know, what is this trend? Is it a trend you've seen from like 20 years ago?
I think in the previous years, what used to happen is that when someone goes to Shago, they come back with food themselves. Mm. But now increasingly people are being sent food. It means urban poverty has increased. I would attribute that to maybe the COVID situation, where a lot of people have lost jobs and they have lost the ability to feed their families in the urban areas like Nairobi. But the other situation could be that the of concern of food safety in Kenya today, because now no one is trusting the food in the market anymore, because we lack enforcement on food safety. I don't know whether you know about that, but for instance, for the food that goes for export, there is a way they test chemical residues, they test for even fertilizer residues at the airport. And if they find them above the limits that they are supposed to be, they are returned to the local market. Some people have done some studies, especially for fruits and vegetables, and they see we are actually consuming poison. And they have seen some farmers, because they are not regulated and the food is not tested. I've seen some farmers saying that, for me, I normally use this section for my family and this section for selling. So where they are supposed to sell, they spray and use any sort of chemical, including the chemicals that are illegal in other countries. Like there are so many chemicals that are in our market, but they are illegal in other countries that they should not be used, but then we are using them here. So even people in the urban areas or even people in rural areas understand this situation very well. And people now want to, like, I should be eating food that I know the source. And if the source is my relatives, then I may trust it more. But the food in the market is not trustworthy enough. So there could be a combination of reasons, and they are all associated with failure of our system and policies to ensure we have safe food and we can all access food.
Okay, just getting into a bit of the seed issue. Walk us through the process of typical seed preservation models that different set of your members use.
I would give you, for example, maize. For instance, for maize, and this is what also my own mother used to do. And this is, she was taught by her own mother, and her mother was taught by her mother, you know. So it's a very long history, which is very useful and practical. And you may not, I don't know whether you were there then in the 70s or in the early 80s, when very few people used to buy seeds. They used to have very good maize in the big ones and very healthy. But what they used to do, they used to identify seeds from the type that maize tassels in the field. And they used to do the marking there. They do the marking. They say, this one has tasseled before the others. What, whichever the plants like produce flowers before the others, this is a plant that is identified to as potential seed. And then they identify amongst the ones they identify to have tasseled before the others. They identify the ones with the biggest cobs. And those ones are also now marked again with sticks, just putting a stick on the soil next to the plant. And they also identify from the ones that they have identified with big tassels. They look at those ones that's tasseled first, and also the ones that with biggest cobs. And they also identify those ones without pests and diseases, so that eventually the cob that becomes seed, or the plant that will produce seeds for the next generation, has three sticks. And it means it is growing faster. It means it is yielding higher. It also means it is resist. It is a bit tolerant to pests and diseases. And eventually, crop continuously improves. It improves in the field. Similar situations applies to any vegetable seeds. And for vegetable seeds, they are almost all the same. They almost all look similar, but the only important knowledge that they had is how to extract. Everybody knew the process of fermenting seeds, so that, like for tomatoes, we used to have the cherry tomatoes, how to detach seeds from these other materials around the seeds through fermentation. They used to do that. They keep them somewhere, they ferment, then they wash, they're able to plant them. And this is a very basic skill every farmer used to have. Today, it's not there. And even the people who have gone to school, if you tell them, for instance, can you make seeds for me, for tomato seeds, for instance, they have no idea even how to get tomato seeds from the field. They think the only way you can get tomato seeds is by going to the shop and buying. Why is that situation? I don't trust the omission. I think it's deliberate to make this person rely on the market, to make the people who are trained in agriculture be the one who are telling people the only solution is to buy. If you don't have money to buy fertilizer, you die of hunger. Otherwise, you must buy. Mm-hmm. And I think loss of this knowledge, because this knowledge is crucial for survival of any community. Loss of this knowledge is what has enslaved people to a situation where people are becoming hungry. People have no knowledge on how to run their own food system.
I mean, that's really interesting, Bwana Daniel. I'm looking at the bill, was it in 2015 or 2017, that essentially sought to outlaw everything that has to do with the indigenous seeds. How has your team and your members responded to this? And what do you think is the way forward to it? How's it been?
Yeah. Actually, the challenge is no one is, according to our laws, we have sort of, they say it's not patent, but we have patents in food and in the crop varieties that they call innovations. Such that if I come up with a new variety of seeds or of maize, and I then have it registered with KEFIS, no one else is supposed to reproduce that or save their seeds or even pass the seeds to someone else. Even after harvesting, I need to pay the person who owned the seed, even when they have not done anything else, so long as they can trace the seed, I can trace my seed to them. Like if I bought 5 seasons back, I still need to continue paying them. And this is the problem. This is a problem that we have. They call them plant breeders' rights. That any plant that has plant breeders' rights, then their seeds should not be saved. We also have a process of registering seeds that discriminate against farmers or against small-scale farmers in the way that before anybody is allowed to deal with the seeds or to pass materials for seeds or to even sell, whether they are farmers or they are huge companies, they have the same procedure. And the procedure is that you have to describe the variety in a way, in a very great details, using the system they call distinctiveness, uniformity, and stability test. So that is a very elaborate kind of details that you need to describe. And if you're describing a variety of bean using a 40-page document, no farmer will be able to do that. And if you cannot do that, and of course, for you to get registered, you have to pay to KEFIS $120,000 for you to register that particular variety. $120,000, some farmers have never seen that kind of money. It therefore means these technical aspects of as requirement for seed registration and the amount of money involved is an obstacle to farmers registering their own seeds. And it is an obstacle to farmers selling their seeds if they want. They cannot sell because there is a deliberate bottleneck set in a way that the only people who are able to meet this requirement are companies, large companies who are able to hire breeders and being able to pay for this test to be done. And therefore, for everyone else who is dealing with these seeds, it becomes illegal. It becomes illegal. But the challenge of that has been enforcement. So even if a lot essentially farmers who are saving seeds, they are committing crimes, the authorities are unable to enforce that because it is very hard to move from farm to farm, thousands of farmers, and check. But now they have started slowly with individual crops. For instance, the farmers who are growing potatoes were protesting the other day, and I think they are in court. They are saying, why am I supposed to be licensed to grow potatoes on my own 2-acre or 1-acre farm? And I have always been doing this, and I have not interfered with anybody. So to me, I think it is just the agrochemical industry wanting to have data on who is using their seed and what farmers are using. And for them to have the data, they use the law. They push the law through the parliament using whichever the mechanism, and then the law is implemented. And once it is implemented using government funding, because these inspectors who are actually going to the farms and inspecting farmers and seeing whether whoever is growing potato is registered and whether they are documenting everything they are using and the source of their seeds and all that, those people are funded by Exchequer. But who is eventually benefiting from the data is agrochemical industry. And I believe they are the source of the law. Therefore, all these laws, including the ones on seeds, the ones that don't allow farmers to sell seeds or exchange or save, they are to protect the industry, and they are not to benefit farmers at all. And it's very serious because the industry make the law. For instance, they have STAC, Seed Traders Association of Kenya. They are the one who propose the bills. They propose the policies, and then they, using their financial muscles, they're able to push them through and they become laws. That's why we have funny laws, because the laws are not serving farmers. They were never meant to serve farmers. They are only serving the industry.